The next topic that I want to talk about is rogue traders. And it's an example of what I described as a risk that you try to minimize. There's just a very interesting history of rogue traders. The first rogue trading I read about was in a book written in 1973. The book's called Super Money, written under a pseudonym of Adam Smith by someone named George Goodman. And this was kind of his second best-selling nonfiction book on financial markets. And it talked about his experience where he bought shares in something called the United California Bank of Switzerland. And that bank lost what at the time was a sort of a fatal amount as far as the future of the bank was concerned of $30 million, where its Swiss subsidiary lost $30 million trading cocoa futures. And it's just a fascinating story, and it explains sort of how the trader just went off on his own and just once he started losing, just started trying to hide the losses and trying to make more bets, and but eventually had to reveal the losses. The next example comes about 15 years later, 1987, and by this time I'm working at Freddie Mac, and so I'm no longer a kid reading about this stuff. The losses are in the mortgage securities market are very interesting to somebody who's working in the industry. And this is Howie Rubin, a trader at Merrill Lynch, who lost a lot of money trading stripped mortgage securities. And we'll talk about what stripped mortgage securities are. And here's another famous rogue trader, Nick Leeson, who worked at Barings Bank and basically broke Barings Bank. Barings Bank did not survive the losses that he incurred as a trader. Here's Wikipedia's list of famous trading losses, and the person associated with it, you'll see this a recent one with credit default swaps. We're trying to measure, sort of rank these by the amount lost in constant dollars. That's that real amount lost. And it's pretty disappointing that Howie Rubin, who was one of the guys I was most interested in, ranks pretty far down on the list, only 28th. So there are a lot of other rogue traders that are higher up on the list. So I just want to put out a hypothesis that rogue trading is actually something that's quite difficult to stop, and that maybe happens more often than anyone would like to admit. Maybe it doesn't often lead to these catastrophic level of losses, but you could see a lot of it. So I joined Freddie Mac in December 1986, and I think the very first project I worked on was a project involving multifamily hedging, it was called. Multifamily hedging. That is when Freddie Mac would create mortgage-backed securities involving multifamily loans in order to hedge risk of interest rate movements before those securities could be sold. They would put on hedges. Okay, and so the project I was put on, I don't have a clear memory of how exactly this all worked, but the project was to help calculate the losses that had been incurred in this multifamily hedging program. Okay, so why would their losses? It was because the trader who was assigned to do the hedging had the following philosophy. He said when interest rates are headed up, you put on a hedge. When interest rates are headed down, You don't hedge. Okay, so that, I don't know if that makes sense to you. It made perfect sense to the trader. Of course, it was his judgment about when rates were headed up and headed down. And so what this amounted to was this trader speculating on whether rates were heading up or down. And I suppose for some period of time, his guesses were good or not particularly bad. And, you know, there was no sign of trouble. Maybe that, you know, if anything, maybe somebody should have noticed that they were making more money in this hedging operation than they should have. But he was basically speculating on interest rates in the name of hedging. And I suspect that sort of thing happens a lot. So that was one example I saw at Freddie Mac. Then about 10 years later, I was talking to someone about sort of how Freddie Mac was managing its liabilities. You know, sort of were they going to take short positions in treasury bills to hedge against a rise in T-bill rates and so on. And this person said, well, we've been looking at the TED spread, which is the spread between the rate on treasuries and the rate on euro dollars. And he said, some really strange things are going on in the TED spread. And so we're going to, instead of using the T-bill market, we're going to use the euro dollar market. So again, what they're saying they're doing is very conservative. They're trying to reduce risk, reduce cost, but he's taking a position on the treasury euro dollar spread. And maybe that position will be right, maybe it'll be wrong. But that's the type of thing hedge funds do. And if we go back to the list of famous losses, we can find somewhere close to the top long-term capital management. A hedge fund that was betting on the sorts of anomalies that my Freddie Mac colleague thought he saw in the TED spread. So my impression really was that my colleague was acting like a trader at a hedge fund. And my guess is that nobody in really high-level management at Freddie Mac knew that this was going on. And again, my colleague meant nothing wrong by it. He just said, you know, there's something anomalous going on in treasuries and euro dollars. We shouldn't be using treasuries as our hedging vehicle. We should be using euro dollars. It made perfect sense to him, but it's a risk that the top management of the corporation probably had no idea that they were taking. So I think the temptation on the trading floor to be a rogue trader, that is to do something that would surprise senior management if it turned out to produce a loss, I think that temptation is tremendous. So I have this very cynical view that, if you want to say who is a rogue trader, it's anyone that you give license to make trades, because the temptation is tremendous. As long as they have any sense that their incentive is based on profit, how well they do, they're going to be tempted to look at situations and say, oh, I can do better than some, you know, automatic routine way of doing trading. You know, if I use my brain, I can make money for this company and maybe make a bonus for myself, depending on how they're compensated. And then they're on the road to becoming rogue traders because, let's say they make money for a while. At some point, then the market turns against them in a surprising way, and the temptation then becomes to hide trade tickets and do all the things that rogue traders do. Yes, there certainly are ways to put controls in to try to reduce rogue trading. to monitor their positions, monitor what they do. But I insist that it's a pretty big challenge, and among many challenges in developing good business processes for managing the risk that you're trying to avoid or minimize.